Whoop-pow! We are back. It's the Californication 2020 podcast with Michael Amos.
It's me.
There it is. There.
Wayne Chang is here as well, I think.
I'm here, kind of. And it's season 1, episode 8, California Sun, S-O-N. S-O-N, not S-U-N.
Yeah. That's like the bad son, right? The prodigal son, the one who left New York City, or let me rephrase that. Left Long Island, right, to go out to California. But of course the dad still loves him, and he actually is in fact an only son. So, he doesn't really have a brother that he has to compete with in any way. Very fortunate for him. So, Wayne.
Yeah, I mean, this episode's about father issues, which, you know, Michael and I absolutely don't have.
None at all. Love my dad. Never had an issue with him, not once. Only issue I have is I just can't measure up. You know, that's a dick joke.
I was trying to think of a good father figure to be like, well, that, I mean, it's hard to measure up to Steve Jobs.
Steve Jobs? No, that's my dad. No, it's easy to measure up to Steve Jobs. I'm pretty sure Steve Jobs has kids, right?
Yeah, several.
Yeah, I'm sure he was a horrible dad. I mean, I've seen the way he treated people in the workplace. There's no way that guy was a good dad. The only thing he did good for his daughter is left her a lot of money and then died young so she didn't have to deal with him.
Damn. Shout out to Lisa.
What? Congratulations, Lisa. You want to restart?
No, we're good.
Okay, all right. Let's. So you have daddy issues?
Me? I guess, yeah. But I don't know. Like we could talk about after the episode, because like there's some stuff.
Did you guys
that's
see
like,
Wayne? Did you guys see him like shipped away? Like his eyes turned away there.
Is that
like started how? Like kind of like darting off camera. He's like, do I have daddy issues? Like, listen, I gotta tell you guys and Wayne, I wasn't trying to hit any soft spots there, and I apologize. You know, we didn't talk about this ahead of time, and I realized I just cut too deep, and I wasn't trying, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's already on.
Too, man.
It's already on Live in the Bike. So if you like, live poker streams, subscribe to Live in the Bike down below. But I've already said like, you know, some stuff about the family issues, and it's just like why the Asian American story doesn't work is because it's so irrational.
Like what? Explain.
So, like, there's all these, like, Asian American films that, like, I guess in the early 2000s or maybe even the late, no, early 2000s, maybe the late
Rush Hour?
2010s. Yeah, Rush Hour 2. No, I mean, Asian American. Yeah, I relate to the daughter in Rush Hour.
Rush Hour, sorry.
Yeah. Bluff me. Yeah. I should have known when you were like, Rush Hour? But I thought you were trolling me. But the thing is that the overarching theme in a lot of these Asian American stories is like the parents mean well. They want them to be like academically strong, like obedient, stuff like that. And the kid always has like all these aspirations and dreams, and they're like actually good at what they do. But the parents don't understand to like let them do that.
I feel like in a few years there's going to be a really good movie coming out about that. So you guys should keep a lookout for it. It's going to be a movie. And
only the first 10 pages.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. So you guys keep on the lookout for it. But listen, if what you're telling, what I'm hearing from you is that Asian American parents, in spite of meaning well, are complete failures, which makes them like every other parents. So yeah, that's not particularly unique.
Yeah,
but parents are really bad at adjusting to the. They're really bad at adjusting to the times. They want everything to be how it was when they were kids. You know,
that's basically exactly what it is. Like people are so like narcissistic and in their own views. Like even selfless people have a narcissistic point for this, which is like the way that they grew up, the way they happened, they're the main character in their own story, and any deviant from that is just like their ego can't handle it because it's like.
But that's right, and it's very difficult for them to keep up. Like their kids are not like them. They grow up in a different set of circumstances, and they grow up with completely different influences, and they can't. You know, parents are often applying. I mean, I see this all the time now with, and this is a really difficult thing because you know, I don't think you've seen Social Dilemma, but, you know, the way that social media has really been created to insinuate itself into our minds and essentially cause us to think in certain ways so that they can get everything out of us that they can get. And, you know, it's really bad for young kids to be on social media in a lot of ways. But at the same time, like, you know, I know a guy who won't let his high school age kids on social media, and it's like, that's really damaging to their social existence now, though. It's really a tough thing because he's
You're right.
It's tough. He's like, they didn't grow up like me. This isn't the right way to grow up. And it's like, well, okay, but your parents thought that about you too, and their parents thought that about them, and this is just an eternal problem. And I don't know if that's a huge, like, theme of this particular episode, because I don't know if there's, like, a huge generational divide between Hank and his dad.
No, it's definitely a morality issue, but it's easier to quantify as we go through. And it's like, part of it is just like forgiveness in one sec.
Sure.
Oh, damn, have COVID. No, just kidding.
Yeah. Okay, so Wayne and President Trump with coronavirus. I'm sorry, Wayne, but maybe you were the hero that we all needed. If you don't, you know, at some point you're gonna have to come and take credit.
We're screwed. But and when people listen to this, but to cap off the Asian American story, it's just irrational, because when the person deviates from what the parent wants them to do, I don't disagree with their parents being like, you shouldn't deviate. It's when they get to an echelon where they're national level or world level at what they do. And I've had this debate with Jason, and I think, and some other people, I think it's actually evil when they start preventing that kind of progress.
Well, I don't think it matters what level they get to. I really don't. I think it's, you have to let them go on their own way and create their own life and do what they want to do. And if they're making a mistake because they're not going to get to a top level of achievement, and they don't go into, you know, the same line of work that their parent is in or whatever, that their parent is kind of like laid out, because this happens a lot with all parents, right? All successful parents will, or many try, successful parents will try to get the doctors, right? And, you know, your most, if your dad's a doctor, right, the job you're most likely to get of all jobs is a doctor. But, you know, you have to let people work out their own shit. You have to let people make their mistakes. You are allowed to give guidance. You are allowed to give advice. But what I can tell you about the best people that I've known in my life have given really strong advice. But then, when you don't take it, they don't hold it against you at all. They don't hold it against you at all. Though that's the best people. Like, the kind of crummy people, what they do is they give you advice and they get super bitter. Right. And it's totally fair to tell somebody can ask for advice, and it's totally fair for you to tell them, I don't think you should be going into this field. That's not unfair. Right. Yep. But what is not cool is when they say, you know what, I appreciate your advice, but I have decided for factors that are related to me that I'm going to do X. I mean, they don't even have to think you're making the right decision.
X is a job, not the drug.
Yeah. Well, or the drug. If your kids want to do drugs, you know, that's their decision. Until they come back, until they get opioid addicted and they come back and, you know, move back into your house and then steal all your stuff and sell it at the pawn shop. And then it's a really ugly situation and you have to send them to, you know, some drug rehab center, you know, for Californication foreshadowing. Or you have to, you know, kick them out or whatever. But yeah, I mean, you gotta let people be who they are, you know. And I don't always follow this because I'm very judgmental, which is why I don't have any friends. But
lovers.
Yeah, well,
you have no friends, only lovers.
Right, but for very brief periods of time, because I generally judge their loving negatively. Hmm. So, you have to let people be who they are. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
So the episode here.
Episode, season 1, episode 8, California Sun. Hank pours out a bottle, takes a swig, stares at a blank screen. Anybody who's written anything or tried to be a writer is very familiar with that blank screen. It's like, yep. But the words won't come out. Yeah.
Nope, there's a Warren Zevon song playing. He's saying, like, work all day, still can't pay the price of gasoline. You know, it's hard to work, man. When you're a writer, you don't get paid, you know, not until you get it done. Not until you actually write stuff. You don't get paid for sitting around staring at that computer screen.
Even when you're done writing, you may not get paid.
Most writers don't get paid ever, but apparently Hank does, because apparently he's had some kind of great book that got turned into a movie. Yeah. And he has a very nice house in Venice, so presumably he has been
paid for his crap.
Yeah, nice Porsche, right? Porsche, yeah. So
he gets a call from his sister on a phone that's not an iPhone, because it's 2007, the iPhone just came out that year. And it was
loser.
Probably
loser.
Shot in 2006, so.
Yeah, it came out in 2007, he doesn't have one yet. What a bitch.
But he can afford a Porsche. And then his spoilers, the sister lets Hank know that their dad passed away.
Yeah.
So flashback. Hank rolls up.
I don't think we knew he had a sister until now. So now we know he has a sister. And now we know he has a dad who was still alive until he got the call.
Oh, spoilers. Oh, wait.
Yeah. Hank. No, the call wasn't a joke. His dad's actually dead. He's toasted.
Hank rolls up in his Porsche at the airport, trots to his dad, gives his dad a big hug. His dad thanks him for the business class upgrade, which has more attractive stewardesses, flight attendants, than I guess coach.
Well, it depends what area you're from. His dad says stewardesses. Hank says flight attendants. His dad makes comments about that says they have great tits, legs for days, and the ass of a 10-year-old boy. That's the way his dad talks. You know, that's the way his people talk. And then, amazingly, in this little dialogue that he has with Hank, where they kind of go back and forth, Hank says some kind of, like, vulgar word. But he said something about, he said, like, damn or something like that. And then the dad told him, watch your mouth. And I was like, dude, you just talked about 10-year-old boys' asses, and you just told Hank to watch his mouth. But the real issue, right, was his dad didn't want Hank talking to him like that. It wasn't about the vulgarity. It was he didn't think that Hank should take a word against his dad. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Then they talk about marriage. Right?
Well, being before that, it's like when the dad's talking about the physical attributes, it's like in the Californication 2020 podcast, how would 2020 receive something like that?
Well, not well, I don't think. I mean, the thing is, you can still do it because it's a reflection of, it's very consistent with the rest of who he is, you know. The dad is pretty consistent in this episode, right? And he's just kind of a skeezy dude. And you know what's great? You know, you've seen Breaking Bad, yes?
Oh,
no. I'm well, I mean, okay, you scratch that off the list. But anyways, obviously you have something to watch because you've missed out on a cultural. Yeah, you've missed out on a cultural touchstone. So, but the guy who plays Hank's dad, it also played Hector Salamanca, who's just like this, you know, in Breaking Bad. And he also played the guy in Scarface with Al Pacino, who, the basically the bomb maker, the drug lord's bomb maker. So he plays a lot of badasses in spots where he doesn't have that much dialogue. So now he does have a lot of dialogue here. Sounds like a kind of skeezy.
Nothing more badass than being Hank Moody's dad, except for being Hank Moody himself.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Hank's not super. Hank is the badass in this relationship, I think. I guess you could see. I mean, maybe not, right? Maybe just being able to chase tail all over town makes you a badass, and Hank's faithfulness is a strike against him. But that's certainly the way his dad would see it. But I don't think that's the way. That's not the way we should see it in 2020.
So this is a key moment because Hank's dad asks him about a purple flower and what it's called. Mm-hmm. And Hank is like, purple, it's called a purple flower? I don't know. Go look it up online, which is in 2007. A lot of progress. Like, people are looking things up online pretty quick.
Well, now you could take a picture of it and like do a Google image search or something for similar stuff, right?
Hank's dad asks him if he's married, and Hank says he's still living in sin. Don't know what President Hank is doing.
Well, he's not living in sin. He's in a committed relationship with his girl, and they're just not getting married because they're more modern and they're hip and they live in L.A.
It was that the contrast, like same word means two different things. Like what living in sin was back then is not being married, and what we consider Hank doing today is kind of living in sin.
Well, the thing is, it's his dad who was living in sin the entire time of that his marriage was going on, right? So what you have is these categories of rules that are shifting and changing over time. And, you know, his dad thinks that as long as you're married, right, that's okay. And then the other stuff you could tell by the way he talks later on in the episode, like what you do on the side is okay as long as you maintain that marriage, right, as if that has nothing to yeah. do with it. Whereas Hank, who is a faithful person who doesn't have a piece of paper that says he's attached but very clearly is attached, right, that he's supposedly living in sin. So it goes to – there's so much stuff in this episode about the hypocrisy of his dad, right? His dad is a huge hypocrite in pretty much every way, and this is the first, this is where we get it first, you know. But, the living in sin line seems really important.
Yeah, just the definition of what a sin is.
Yeah, exactly. And then they got a ticket, right? Hank had a ticket on his car.
Yeah.
That was ludicrous because, unfortunately, I can tell you from experience, when you get a ticket at LAX, they don't actually put a ticket on your car. They take down your license plate, and you get a ticket like a month later in the mail.
In the mail, yeah.
So that was unrealistic. But then again, I've never parked and left my car like on the side of the street at LAX, which I can't even imagine anyone really doing these days, because if you just park your car and leave it, you're gonna cause a shitstorm like immediately, you know. So that's not a thing.
So Hank's dad says Porsche's fancy, sure you can afford it. So his dad's more practical financially,
I guess.
I mean, it's just like, you know, they're gonna be contrasting views, which, you know, one of my closest buddies Jay Severinson said is, you know, from his own experience too, like father and son, like sons are supposed to grow up to be their own person, which, you know, at the end of the episode they mentioned as well. So like, as a dad, if you have a son, instead of like this like narcissistic view that they should be like a part of you or an extension, like at some point they got to be their own person.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, but it's the relationship, dads and moms and people who have kids, they have this, they do view the kid as an extension, right? I mean, yeah. They view the kid as an extension themselves. So I think what happens is when the kid rejects what they want for the kid, that it's like it hurts their own ego, you know, because it feels like damage themselves. And I mean, let's be real, right? Moms and dads, you know, I mean, they're having kids, you know, on some level by accident, but I mean, you know, on another level, what they're really doing is having kids, because the reality is, you know, we all know that nobody really loves us, you know, like on some level we're all out on an island on our own. And so we want to have that creature that gives us unconditional love and isn't a dog. So we have a kid, right, expecting that we'll get unconditional love. And then it turns out our kids hate us too. So as in most things we do, it ends up being this gigantic failure of an effort, but that's really, you know, what people are about. So I think being, you know, rejected by your kids or having your kids be judgmental about you can be very, very, it can be very hurtful. And there's a big defense mechanism that parents use to avoid this, which is to be dismissive about the stuff that their kids do, you know, like almost preemptively.
So present day, Judy Greer, who is Royce in How I Met Your Mother, Ant-Man's ex-wife, ask Hank what he thinks about rehab, and Hank responds, "Rehab is for quitters."
Mm-hmm.
I love that line. Anyway,
yeah, he's pretty hammered right now, but it's a good line. But just to be fair, like, we fully support rehab. If you guys are going to rehab, that's good. Go to rehab. You know, if you're not going to rehab, you know, don't start the drugs. Except mushrooms, they're good for you.
Hank asks for her name. She responds, "It's Trixie."
It's a good name, yeah.
And Hank says, "That's a beautiful name. If you're a hooker." Yeah.
Well, I kind of like that line. I mean, it's funny, but at the same time, if her name really is Trixie, it's kind of cold. But nonetheless, you know, if you can't deal with that joke, then, you know, we're really not meant to hang out anyway. So I like the line. But Hank's got, he's got a surprise coming for him, though.
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously ironic that we know it. We as audience know if he cracks that joke, she's gonna be a hooker. So, and she is, and she's just, or actually, she's like, "What makes you think I'm not a hooker?" And Hank's like, "Well, you're far too beautiful." And Trixie's like, "All right, heard that line before."
Well, yeah. Well, no. What she should have said was that just makes me expensive.
Yeah. Just she should have been like. Price hike.
Yeah, I mean that just, you know, it's not hookers come in all stripes, man. Like, you know, some of them cost, you know, $5 in the back alley. Others of them, you know, cost like $30,000 for like a week on a, you know, on an exotic island. Like, there's, you know, there's a wide range here.
I mean, I got hired
uncapped
bicycle hotel and casino for a lot less than that.
Well, listen, Wayne. Okay, so I don't. What? Okay, when we're using metaphorical language for you, I think describing you as a hooker would be very odd. More correct to describe you as a whore, which, although they're the same thing.
What's the difference?
Right. While they are the same thing, right? It feels like whore has metaphorical extensions of just like being willing to sell yourself
out,
off
sell, right,
for
right,
a dollar, right?
Right, yeah.
Hooker feels very, you're selling yourself out in a very specific way. It never really got extended that way, although it could, but it really doesn't.
That's
it
a probably, very good point. I never thought of
probably
that.
we shouldn't call you either one of these, you know,
prostitute. Then you should call me a prostitute.
Well, yeah, no. I mean, maybe maybe. No, but I mean, listen. What you're doing is what we're all
desperate.
Forced to do. No, what you're doing is late. We are all forced to do this under, you know, the horrors of capitalism if we would like to eat and have shelter. So, no choice. We are all prostitutes to capital.
Yeah, I didn't want to deviate. We'll save it for a Live Bike Poker Stream podcast topic about that, which is discussed extensively. But yeah, basically, at some point in your life, you're just like, hey, I need to make money. Which job that I tolerate can make me the most money, and you just go.
Yeah. No, and now you can understand why people end up having sex for money, because that seems like a fairly tolerable one. Although I guess...
I would like that offer.
Yeah, but it might be, I'm not sure. I would like... I'm not sure I would. I mean...
I'm not saying I would. I'm just like, I don't even have the option, so...
Yeah, I want to... It's like an honor to be offered, right? You're like, really? You'll pay me?
Yeah.
Like, huh. Well, thank you very much, but... You know, I'm not interested, David, but, you know, like, I appreciate the offer.
Open. Yeah. I mean, it's like.
I've been propositioned a few times. That's true.
There was that Sunset Boulevard Parasite comparison. And Sunset Boulevard, the guy, the writer, can't, you know, get his job going. And then he sells out to the old lady.
That's... Yeah, right. I mean, he does what. We all sell out in some way or another. It'd be tough to call him a hooker, but he kind of is. But he's basically making the kind of cold calculation that people make when they, you know, get into a relationship with somebody who they're not, like, physically into for, you know, money and financial support and having nice things and stuff like that. And normally we see that, right? The stereotype is that it's going to be, you know, like, younger women getting into these relationships with older men, right, for all of the shit that they have. Right, shout out to Melania right now. She's probably feeling pretty good.
I think it was they're both my buddies, Joe Ingram and Joe Stapleton, and on their podcast they mentioned that when they were in financial need, they were charmers and got a little sugar mama. And I'm
Ryan
like,
Hayden, man.
Huh?
Ryan Hayden. I ain't hating. I wish I knew where to go to find that.
Same. I just like when I heard the story. Actually, Joe Ingram told it on a podcast with Lyman first, and Lyman's like, "Oh, really?" Because like, and I was a little, I guess, taken aback too. Like, no disrespect, because like, there are definitely times I was like, you know, in need of some dollar bills. I'd be like, "Is there any sugar mamas out there?" But then.
Sure.
Joe Stapleton, Joe Ingram mentioned it. They're like, you know, they're and like, it's life experience. It's like an interesting life experience. And
Joe Stapleton is a whore. That's what's happening there. But if there are any sugar mamas out there, you know, leave us a comment. You know, send us email. Sign up for our Patreon, and give us some financial support. But also, you know, I mean, both of us are I mean, we're pretty willing to do a lot more. And if you get us negotiating against one another, we'll probably come down to a price that, will be pretty tolerable for you. Because, Wayne and I, neither one of us has any pride, really, at all. Kind so of, I'm just yeah. saying, if you're out there looking for an opportunity, like, you have found the right spot. That's not good advertising, is it? That's really bad. Like, I'm supposed
to, well, they have to call our bluff first, so they have to actually believe
call,
it.
No, yeah, please call my bluff. Yeah, I'm bluffing. Yeah, call my bluff. Yeah, let's see how much I'm bluffing. You know, and for me, the older the better, right? The older the better.
Joe Kim has bought us for 99 cents, and we're going to chop that
Joe,
up. So
Joe
we're
Kim,
40...
Joe Kim is amazing, but she's not old enough, you know?
That's true.
Like,
that's fair.
I need someone who might go down as a result of coronavirus. You know, like, I need somebody who I can get in and get that money, like, as quickly as possible.
That is very intelligent.
Very classless,
it's also freaking strategy.
Yeah, no, listen, hey, don't judge me, people. You know, it's not like y'all weren't thinking it. isn't it fun how horrible people assume everyone else thinks like them? You know, I mean, we could certainly talk about that in the context of infidelity in this episode, but yeah, they never understand what you're up to because horrible people always think that everyone else is like trying to cheat. Like people who are like, you know, dirtbags, cheaters, you know, scumbags, like in poker or in business or anything, like they always think other people are trying to get over on them, right? Yeah. When there's a whole class of other people who are out there just doing their thing.
Trying to do their own thing, yeah.
Yeah, and mostly trying to make like mutually beneficial, not obviously this doesn't apply to poker, but like there are tons of people who in the world are trying to make like mutually beneficial deals with people, like trying to make it, they're not trying to rip people off. Like a huge percentage of deals do not involve people trying to rip each other off. People just trying to find a good price or whatever and make good value, but then these scumbags, like these people who got to cheat everything, it really, in order to justify their own cheating, they have to believe everybody else thinks like that so that they can be like, yeah, I got one over on him, but if I didn't get one over on him, like he would have got one over on me. It's like, no, that's not how it is, but they bring us all down, you know? Like we're all dragged down to the level of a car dealer when we're in the car dealership. Like you have no choice but to operate like that because you know they're trying to screw you. So you have no choice but to get on their level and be super cutthroat. And it sucks. And it's uncomfortable. And it's socially awkward. And we're programmed to be cooperative. And that's why they get to get over on us. Because they get to abuse the fact that, you know, they can put us
prisoner's
in a spot where...
Prisoner's dilemma, man.
Yeah. It's awful, man. It's awful. But, of course, the prisoner's dilemma, right? The car dealer mostly is only selling you a car one time. I mean, that's not entirely true. There is the repeat business does value for them, but the prisoner's dilemma when it gets repeated, right? Like that guy, what happens, right? You know, what was that show that Liv Boré screwed that guy?
Golden Balls or something.
Golden Balls, right? Amazing name for a show. Right?
Yeah, I know exactly.
Golden Balls.
Never
right?
forget
in that
it.
Show. No, Liv definitely had the golden balls in that episode because she completely castrated that dude. And
oh my God.
She, you know, yeah, if you guys don't know what I'm talking about, you can look it up. It's Liv Boré, and it's called Golden Balls, and it's on YouTube. But basically all it is the game at the end is a prisoner's dilemma. If you guys ever saw Friend or Foe with, you know, Deplorable Kennedy from MTV, it's the same concept at the end, and it's the prisoner's dilemma, which I guess we should explain the prisoner's dilemma because there might be some people
who aren't gamers
who don't understand the prisoner's dilemma. So you want to explain the prisoner's dilemma? You want
damn
me to?
Damn, go ahead, yeah.
Oh, well, I hope I don't mess it up. Essentially, the prisoner's dilemma goes like this. It's like if you and your buddy are both arrested for a crime and say you're given the option, right? You guys are both given the option separately. You're in an individual room, so you can't communicate. You're both given the option to... you're both given the option to either sell the other guy out or to maintain your silence, right? And what happens, what? Yeah.
I'm doing gestures while you tell the story. Silence.
It's very excellent, excellent. Right, so imagining like, so, you know, if Wayne and I are both arrested, right, and they ask,
He did it.
Exactly. That's what you do, right? And the thing about the prisoner's dilemma, what happens is you basically get the best possible result in the game if you tell on the other person, and they don't tell on you. What happens to them in that case? They end up going to jail for like a long time, right? Like,
I think
there's different versions, but
there's different versions. So the threshold would be like, if we both don't tell on each other, we both get five.
5 years in jail.
Yeah, right? 5 years in jail. If I tell on you and you don't tell on me, then you get 10 and I get one or free or something.
You get none. You get none, I think. Yeah. So the best possible result for individual in this game is for you to rat the other guy out and for them not to rat you out. If you both rat each other out, you do both end up going to jail for some period of time. But if only one guy rats the other guy out, he goes to jail for a long time, and you don't that. And
no,
the guy
but if both people don't rat each other out, then you guys have the best outcome.
No, the best outcome is you rat him out and he doesn't rat you out.
Oh right.
Yeah, the best outcome, because that's cooperation.
So when
two people stay silent, so what happens is, you know, basically this is getting long-winded, but the long story short is, from a game theory standpoint, the best result in a prisoner's dilemma is for you to rat out the other guy and for him not to rat you out. And that's what Liv Beret does to the guy on the show. You essentially have an option if you want to split the money or if you want to take all the money. But the problem is, if you both choose to take all the money, in that case, you end up getting nothing, I think. Mm-hmm. Right?
Or for that particular game.
Right. But the solution is very, very easy. Without explaining, you guys can look up Prisoner's Dilemma. The solution to this game is pretty easy. But the solution is, you're going to tell on your buddy. You're going to rat out your buddy. You're going to burn your buddy. You're not going to be cooperative. But the thing about the Prisoner's Dilemma is that that solution is only the correct solution if the game is played merely once. What?
No, you froze for a bit. Go ahead. You're fine.
Oh, okay. So did they hear what I said?
Yeah.
So the solution to the Prisoner's Dilemma is only correct if it's played once. If the game is iterative, which means it's played repeatedly, you end up converging on a solution. And there's a little bit of debate about this, but you end up converging on a solution that's actually cooperative. Because what happens is, when it gets played over and over again, the other guy realizes that you burned him, right? And then what happens is, he's going to burn you. And then you realize he burns him, and then you're going to burn him. And what's going to happen is, you end up in this situation where everybody's burning and it doesn't work out well for you. And you guys will kind of, even if it's played, even if you guys have to make your decisions independently, eventually you will realize that in order to coerce future cooperation with this person, to minimize the penalty for you, and to get them to stop choosing the screw you option every time, which just does you no good, you end up having to cooperate. Right. There is a little bit of debate about this, because I guess the actual solution that, like, computers come to is, like, mostly cooperation, but maybe screwing the other guy over, like, a little bit, like, just enough to where he doesn't, like, change his strategy, but, like, you know, you just, you get over on him, like, every once in a while. Doesn't really matter. Why are we talking about the Prisoner's Dilemma, exactly? How are we tying this into Californication? Shit. Hookers or something?
I guess.
Hey guys, stick with us. Californication 2020. Great podcast.
Oh man.
Excellent content.
Let's see if people like the Deviant or, you know, whatever.
We're going to go through more rudimentary game theory in a pretty haphazard fashion in future episodes. Soon I'll talk about why we have to nuke the whole world. Okay.
We went off a massive rabbit hole. Anyway, let's get back on track with the...
Yeah, especially since we don't even know where the track is.
I don't know. Hank is like, if you really were a street-walking cheetah, then Hank would get Trixie to give it to him for free. Like, you know, Hank has shown in most of Californication.
This is how ignorant Hank is, right? To imagine that somebody in 2007 who looks like Trixie is a streetwalker is preposterous. That's not how it works. You know, 2007, I'm making my ears mixed up, but 2007, she was probably on Craigslist or something like that. Like, you know, I don't know what sites were there. There used to be a bunch of sites before the government, the feds passed a bunch of laws that banned a lot of these sites, but she was on, like, Craigslist or Backpage or whatever existed back in the day. You know that magazine that you go when you walk around LA, when you walk around Hollywood, like there's a bunch of magazines and it's just like littered. The back pages are just littered with them. So there's no way she would ever be a streetwalker. That's not a thing. That's not a thing. It's 2007, man, like not 1987. You know, they're not at the Arby's up on Sunset.
Speaking of which, like the ambiance of the club, it just like, yeah, brought back memories of, you know, being a younger demographic and going into those things. And just like now I'm just like, I can't even imagine going back to those environments.
You mean that like the like hip bar that they were at?
Yeah.
Yeah. It felt it's Hollywood, so it's kind of okay. There aren't actually too many places where it really wouldn't have been that out of place for people as old as like Hank and Karen to be in a place like this. It's okay, kind of, in Hollywood, depends on the place. But yeah, it's really a younger person's game, man.
Yeah, I mean, and just like I've been to places like that, and I'm just like, I can't even imagine ever doing that again. Because like you go there, you like spend money, and you're like, what? Like the best case scenario, at least for me, was like I got a decent conversation.
Yeah.
And maybe no, phone number.
For me, yeah, exactly. No, I get it. There is no best case scenario for me. I didn't even get a decent conversation. I would just sit in the corner scared the whole time. Hope, you know, unfailingly that someone would come and rescue me, but nobody ever did because I'm not a girl. You know,
Esther, rescue him.
No, I mean, what would happen is occasionally a creepy old man would come and try to rescue me. And that was even less pleasant than...
too real.
So, yeah, so it's bad. I have no interest in going to places like that. I believe, though, that for guys like Hank Moody, you can go into places like that and get laid. For me, I'm stuck with Backpage.
I've seen it.
And,
yeah.
And now, thanks to Trump, I have no outs. So, you know, thank God for Pornhub.
Shout out to the PH. Not Phil Hellmuth. Pornhub.
Yeah, no shout outs to Phil Hellmuth.
Hey, I'm shouting him out. He had a podcast. He had a good podcast.
No, I want to be clear.
I can't.
If you're watching, no, yeah. I rescind. Okay. I rescind. Yeah. Shout out has been rescinded, Phil.
So, Hank claims he's never paid for sex in his life, which is...
Yeah, Trixie said she doubted that. I actually don't. I think he's telling the truth.
Yeah, sure, of course. In this fictitious world, in this fictitious Californication universe, he's of course telling the truth.
I think he's just... listen, you see how much tail this guy pulls. This guy just drives down the road and has girls like throw their numbers at him. You know, like there's... In this universe that he's in, there would be absolutely no reason that he would ever pay for it. Although, I guess, you know, it's not like entirely true that people pay for... Like, the psychological reasons for paying for it are a little bit different. And sometimes I guess there are guys who actually do get like all kinds of tail who nonetheless pay for it. You know, at times, so that they, you know, like don't have to spend like, you know, all night with someone or something like that.
Shout out to Charlie Sheen.
yeah, exactly, right? Like, you know, Charlie Sheen. Yeah, man, Tiger Milk.
Wow.
So. Well, all right. So back. Yeah. So now we go to. I don't want to say in this scene. I guess Karen was actually really supportive in this scene. It seemed like she showed up on her own. This must be like a normal haunt of Hank's, or maybe she contacted him on that non-iPhone.
It's a show.
but she's being very supportive. She comes, she heard Hank's sister called Karen and she shows up, right? And this is a pretty nice thing that Karen does. Like, she still obviously cares about him and is worried about him and knows he's going to be, you know, fucked up by his dad being, you know, dead. So, which, you know, is a pretty fucked up thing. So, understandable.
And but Trixie excuses herself from the scene, so once Karen comes in. So,
yeah.
Karen's like, want to get out of here. Hank is like, where? Your home, my home, our home. Yeah. And Karen bought him a plane ticket, which is probably the most fictitious thing in the entire show, right? I'm just kidding. And then...
You've never bought a plane ticket for anyone at a time that they didn't approve of, that you have no idea when they can actually fly out? You never done that?
Hank leaves with Trixie and she's like, the meter's running.
which it is. You know what Hank says? He says, you know, she asks if he wants to go home and Hank says, like, home, that sounds nice, but where is home? Yeah. Right? Because home is a... I mean, he has a house, but sorry, I have to fix my computer. But home is a state of mind, and you know, his has been uprooted. He no longer has Becca and Karen, right? He no longer has his dad. His mom has already passed away as well. So, you know, his home back in Long Island. I understand this. My dad passed away when I was in college, and within a matter of a couple years, my mom had, run off with a neo-Nazi to a completely different city, and my brother left and my sister left, and now where I grew up, which was in the suburbs of Detroit, I have I got nothing there, right? I got a bunch of friends who, interestingly don't want to see me, so it's
Why'd you steal their girlfriends?
I don't want to talk about it, but I mean, look, they have let it be known. It's not just a hint that they've let me know. Like they've made it understood in no uncertain terms that we're not friends anymore, if we ever were.
Wow.
So, yeah, I understand. So I got no reason to go back. So like, yeah, it's like I hear all these people who go back home for Thanksgiving and things like that. Yeah. I don't have a home to go to for Thanksgiving. If I want to go to visit my family at Thanksgiving, I got to go to Nazi town. Nah, forget it. So I got no home. I understand. I'm divorced. I lost my home.
You have a home.
Shit's real.
The bicycle hotel and casino.
Yeah, well, now that's closed, right? Now they said, fuck you, we don't want you back.
Reopening.
Yeah. So I feel Hank, like home sounds nice, but where is that exactly? Right? I'm still trying to find it.
Esther. Live. I don't know. Hey, Mike is so into you, he will let you beat him in Prisoner's Dilemma in Golden Balls. Okay.
First of all, if you set up, the actual easiest Prisoner's Dilemma I could handle, okay. But if you set up anything beyond a level one game theory game, Liv destroys me. I don't have to let her win. Like, Liv is going to dominate me. There's no question about that. And I'll be happy the whole time.
Make him happy, Liv. So, back in the past, we're on a set with clearly Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes and their puppy called Love. Get it? Puppy Love?
Yeah, that's the crazy little thing called Love is a puppy. Is that really Hank Moody? Does that have anything to do with a book that Hank Moody wrote? I guess. I don't know. I thought the Tom Cruise was awful. I thought he was really bad. There must be a better Tom Cruise impressionist that you can get out there.
I mean, that's part of the joke was that it was like
that he was bad.
Yeah.
But you know who I really liked in the scene? You won't be surprised.
What?
Who do you think I liked in the scene?
Amber Heard.
Amber Heard was in the scene?
Yeah, the actress. Amber plays Amber Heard.
Amber Heard?
Yeah.
No way.
I looked it up too.
That's spectacular because I had no idea that I was getting, I did not get like super crazy nut job vibes from her, and I know she's just absolutely batshit with, at borderline personality disorder at best. So I didn't know. I didn't even know. Yeah. I really hope Hank stayed away from that because there's no recovering from that. Like like she might kill you. So I hope he stayed away from that. I hope his dad did too.
I like that. I like that the character was called Amber. Like, Amber Heard had to have been like, yeah, just call the character Amber. Because they specifically used her name.
Right. So that she was just playing like somebody who was like an actress in the movie. So I think she was playing herself. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it was like a meta thing to like play herself or whatever.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty wild. I had no idea that was her. And wow, yeah. This was the woman who was with Johnny Depp, right? When they just both went completely bonkers and
Elon Musk.
She's very special, right? Three completely neurotic individuals. They're made for each other. They should all live together, and then it should be filmed as a reality show. It would be the highest grossing reality show in the history of television.
Boom. So
except for Californication, which seems like a reality show. It's definitely David Duchovny's actual wife.
So Amber gives Hank a hug, and Hank insists that he's loyal to his wife, Karen, non-wife Karen, when Hank's dad is asking.
Right, so, right. Because Hank's disloyal dad, who was nonetheless married, right? Yeah, and Hank's dad couldn't even say anything when Amber was there, by the way. So I don't know. We're told that this guy has quote-unquote coups in all sorts of area codes, including San Diego. But he didn't seem to have much game there. Not gonna lie, he couldn't even talk to the girl, but maybe she was just so out of his range that he couldn't even handle it.
Yeah.
I didn't tell you who I liked in the scene.
Who? What?
I like Carr.
Oh, Aaron Carr.
Carr is, you know, we saw in, if it was last episodes or a couple episodes ago, where Carr was willing to debase himself and essentially, he was essentially debasing himself, but letting bygones be bygones by trying to option Hank's blog. And now what we see as he's directing this movie, he's letting Tom do his thing. He's like, you know, Hank asked something, if was that your idea? And he was like, no, the actor thought
he's
of
so
it. You
money.
Know, and it
just,
yeah, he's letting, he, Carr lets artists do their thing. You know, he like, he respects people, he works with them. And then, you know, Hank just is enraged and Carr does have to lay down the law and say, listen, your book, my movie. But
It
is pretty unthinkable. That
Hank first was a narcissist and he was just like, my movie. And then, you know, Todd's like, no, no, no. Your book, my movie. And this is a big thing. And then Hank's dad was there to slap some reality into Hank, saying, like, you know, it's that now it's in movie form. It's actually immortalized versus when it's a book. You know,
this is the worst, though. It's the worst when one of your family members sells you out like Hank's dad did here. Right, like Hank's dad, like agreeing, like, yeah, he's a pain in the ass. Like, I remember a story from way back in the day when I was a little kid. And my grandma, you know, my grandma lives in one of these suburbs where all the neighbors hate each other, you know. And, you know, they all think that they don't mow each other's lawn. They don't mow their own lawn enough. And, you know, I mean, they just have the pettiest of squabbles, right? Because they're just very angry Americans and white people, of course. And, you know, so my grandma and her neighbor on one side hated each other. And then one day the neighbor was complaining to my uncle, my grandma's son, about how crazy my grandma was. And my uncle said, yeah, she is pretty crazy sometimes. And of course the lady just threw this at my grandma, just viciously said, your son said you're crazy, you know, like just wouldn't let her go about it. And the thing is, my grandma is crazy. And she was almost surely completely responsible for this neighbor, for this spat between neighbors. But nonetheless, to have her son, you got to keep stuff in house. You know, we all know our other family members are absolute batshit. We know that, like they are. But you don't drag that in public, you know, unless you're doing a podcast about Californication.
then
you can
normal.
Put it all out there. Then you can just sandblast your grandma. Shout out to grandma if you're watching, grandma. You know,
who loves the police.
Grandma loves the police, right? I love you, Grandma, and I know you love the police, right? That's what she said in response to me. So when I said I love you, yeah.
So Hank now does, and it's in the present day, Hank now does a line of blow off Trixie's back, which is, for the guy that claims not to be cliche, that's just like cliche, right?
It's pretty cliche, but he did say it was his first time, and he's clearly having a day, right? I mean, his dad died, his parents, he has
that's
no parents
fair.
Left, right? That's a pretty... It's a pretty shocking moment, right? I think it's not that you care. I mean, in some ways, it's relief when your parents finally die because then you're finally out of their judgment. But you also know you're the oldest person left in the family, which means your death is coming very soon as well. So I think it's a pretty tough day, you know, and you have to... The thing is, like, you know, other people, they're mostly just objects, right? So their mortality is a curiosity, but your own mortality, that's serious business, and that sucks. So he's having a day. And so he's got to do the things that he hasn't done, right? He's got to do some cocaine, you know. Do you really do it off a back? I mean, okay.
I have no idea. I mean, it's always not always, but like it's something that's joked about, you know. But I guess, you know, it's
well,
not in TV form.
Let me just say, I've only ever once seen somebody do coke off of a girl, and it was at a fraternity house at Florida State University, and I was 37 years old. Yeah. All right, moving on.
I gotta say, it's slamming zero, and Ant-Man's daughter in.
Uh-oh.
Is,
so.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can hear. You can probably hear that in the background, right?
I heard something. What was that?
The fire alarm is going off in my building, but it seems to have stopped. But I have to warn you.
It was okay. Yeah, I mean, we'll cancel it or we'll.
When
it,
we'll have to if it keeps going because it will not stop. But if it's going to stop now, then we got a chance. Let's keep going and go for the best.
All right. So Ant-Man's daughter, or sorry, Ant-Man's ex-wife, who's
who?
Judy Greer. Ant-Man, the Marvel movie, like Judy Greer, the girl, Trixie is the ex-wife. Yeah. Trixie's ex-wife, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know she had that. I like her a lot, but I didn't know she had that big time of a
She's
role.
in a
Very
lot of
nice.
stuff, yeah.
Yeah, she
And
is.
so,
Yeah,
so
she's
like,
cool.
the daughter in Ant-Man, don't watch Californication. You're gonna see your mom in a, as
Yeah,
a, as a
she's okay. Oh, that's funny. Yeah,
yeah.
that should totally be a line. Yeah.
So Trixie calls out Hank for running away from something because you don't, shack up with a hooker in a hotel room and do blow who isn't running away from
Right.
something.
Trixie seems pretty smart. You
Sure.
know, she's definitely high class. Like, she's going after that Elliot Spitzer crowd, right? She's definitely not a streetwalker.
And somehow escape the Epstein stuff. Oh, whoa.
Yeah, well, that's listen, she's way too old for Epstein.
Whoa.
Nah, that's just truth, man. That's not even a slam. Like, he would that dude, you know, if you can find out where he's hiding right now, like, he'll admit that straight away.
Hank says, "Stop joking about being a hooker," to Trixie.
Yeah.
And
Yeah, I mean,
then.
Hank still hasn't realized it. She's been straight with him the whole time, but Hank just can't hear it, you know?
Yeah.
Hank just can't hear the truth.
So Hank tries to get out of paying, where he just doesn't have any money on him.
Yeah.
And one thing I noticed from a cinematic point of view, Judy Greer is never naked. So she's one of the, probably the
Dude, yeah.
only. Well, the only one that's like not Karen when like one fling that's just
Yeah.
like not naked. So
Yeah, her, Karen, we'll have to pay
Karen
attention to the
doesn't
show and see if,
count. Karen, yeah, Karen
right.
doesn't count because
Yeah,
she's gonna be the Rick.
let's see if that ends up being true on the show. That's interesting. I do think I think there's one more.
Yeah, Amber Heard not
Coming up
naked
late.
too.
What? What?
Amber Heard in the beginning, but that
Well,
doesn't
Amber Heard,
count.
you
That
know,
doesn't count because like.
that was off screen with his dad. But you know, that was who he had to go see in San Diego the next day. You know, Hank thought it was an old fling. It turned out he made a connection with Amber. So, yeah.
So Hank, oh God.
No, really good spot on that because, you know, one thing, it does seem like, you know, they used a lot of sensationalism on the early episodes, right? There were a lot of different boobs on the show. And it does seem like maybe it slowed down. I don't think there are any on this episode,
Well,
right?
Judy
So,
Greer like is actually an actress. I've seen her in other stuff too. Like she's in a sitcom and I don't know. And she was, yeah, she's just
right,
a
but
like an actual actress.
tons of actually actresses, you know, get at least topless on you know
Sure,
any number
but
of shows. So,
I'm pretty sure she said no, or the price tag would have been way too high or whatever. So
yeah. Well, I'll Google after we're done with the podcast. I'll see if I can find them.
anyway, Hank doesn't have any cash, so things are about to go down.
Yeah.
So back in the past, Hank, Karen, and Becca are with his dad. They're in Venice, and Karen is about to be with Bill, I guess. And they call out Bill for liking Karen. And so
Yep.
I guess you're right. Like I'm starting to agree with like Karen's in a lot of wrong
Yeah.
already. Karen calls out Hank for being around actresses all the time. Excuse
Well,
me.
what you're pointing out, though, this is something that people who are thinking about being unfaithful, this is something that they do. They start sprinkling in
Projecting.
things. Yeah, and like it's easy to miss, but they'll start, well, they definitely project, right? They project as a way to justify, you know, what they're doing. But they'll also start like talking about people and like, you know, in this spot where she's like defending Bill, she's like, he appreciates, you know, style. He's an environmental, he likes green, he's an environmentalist. Like, you can tell like the way she's being defensive about him. Of course, this is, you know, we know what's coming, but, and of course, you know, but you can tell like people just, when people start just talking about some like random weird person, you know, you should definitely be wary if that person is like a possible love interest.
Yeah.
That they might have. Just saying.
Uh-oh, hit too hard home.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. I'm not
Yeah.
kidding, but it's definitely something you see in the red pill era. Like a lot of red flags, but it is what it
Yeah.
is. Like after you
Yeah,
go
and then
through.
Hank's dad is a real dick in this scene because he keeps,
Yeah.
I mean, he's like, you should have seen Hank with actually, I mean, this stuff can be actually be good because then it gets her a little bit jealous and then you might actually get laid. But like he's like, yeah, you should have seen this girl today, you know, sex on a stick, you know, blah 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 blah. But like, you know, he's a dick for that, and then he's a dick for what he does with Becca too. You can fill us in.
Well, yeah, Karen gives Hank the evil eye because she didn't really suspect. I mean, she would have bought in to Hank saying nothing's happening, which nothing is happening, but Hank's dad threw suspicion Hank's way. And then Becca agrees with like Hank's dad, that he's a whiny little bitch, which is like, you know, a kid probably shouldn't be saying that about, you know, about their parent.
No, but it's a very weird thing that somebody would say that in front of a kid at the table, unless it was already established that the kid talked and heard things like that, which sometimes happens. But also, he didn't go to the zoo with Becca, right? Which is a pretty classless thing for a grandpa to do.
Yeah.
You know, and his excuse was, I got to go down to San Diego. Like, dude, you can go to the zoo in LA and then still make it down to San Diego in the same day. Like, I'm pretty sure whatever, you know, 80-year-old girl you got down there waiting for you, I'm pretty sure she's still going to be waiting.
No, she like, might be or, dying, you know, unless she's
106-year-old, 106-year-old, you know, shout out to Helen Hill.
Shout out to Double H.
Yeah.
And then Hank is pissed at his dad for, you know, being horny and cheating on his mom, never being there for his family. But he's like, he's out in California from Jersey, or, you know, Long Island. So I don't know.
Well, without getting personal, stuff is really tough to recover from. When you're, it's really tough to forgive your parents for their transgressions. It really is.
I believe you. Same. I mean, like, I, you know, like we shouted in the beginning, I had a good childhood, like, you know, literally 99%, 99.9%. Yeah,
you did.
I feel like, yeah, I had a good childhood.
What happened to you then? What happened to you?
Well, this was the Asian American thing. Like, what I wanted to do was like world level, national leveling, and then.
Oh yeah, but there's a lot more wrong with you. There's a lot more wrong with you than that. Do you have any explanation?
I mean, like, my dad pulled like a last emperor in China thing. Like, it's just like an assertion of like elder authority. Like, if you don't do what I say, then I will break up the family, or, you know, or whatever. It's just like stuff like that. Just like,
you know what makes me feel really bad right now, Wayne? Like, I feel genuinely bad in my heart. It's that when I said there's a lot more wrong with you than that, I was just completely joking, right? But the way you took it was like, yeah, you're right, there is a lot more wrong with you than that. And then you try to give an explanation for like why there's so much wrong with you, and that makes me feel so bad, because you shouldn't feel like that. You're a good dude, man. Like, I'm just fucking with you. Like, seriously, I feel like...
Well, fucking with me confirmed it worked. It worked.
Oh,
so,
man.
I got issues. Well, I got issues. Yeah, we have issues. Everyone has issues.
We'll do some shrink appointments. We'll do some virtual shrink appointments on Monday and get it worked out.
Yeah, everyone's got issues, and we're all trying to work it out. So, Hank's... Yeah, sorry. Karen calls out... Hank does that too, which is not be there for his family, and they've had a real conversation. Yeah. And 1 month accuses Hank of having his head up his ass. Hank says, you know, let's go back to New York. Hank says that that's selfish now, because she just built a career here and, you know, moved out here with nothing, which is already like red flags. True. Yeah, but it's also red flags too, because
total. Absolutely.
In retrospect, it's like, you know, she's doing a lot of like verbal justification, which is like, she just built a career here with Bill. Mm-hmm. So there's like,
that's right.
If she really believed in like we're dying or whatever, you know, their souls are dying, then yeah, go back to New York.
That's Hank wants to do that because he wants to make a dramatic move now to save the relationship, because that's what people will often do when they're drifting apart, is do something dramatic like have a child, you know, move, something like that. But I want to take us back a little bit, because what's happening here is similar to something we saw earlier in the show. Do you remember with Meredith, right? Hank's first love interest, really, in the show, other than Karen, right?
Yeah, actually.
And
actual
I mean, he has other dalliances, but this is a little mini relationship that he has.
Right.
And do you remember when they're at the restaurant after Hank had gone on the Henry Rollins show and, you know, talked badly about, you know, LOL and stuff like that, and then she said she heard it and she was all upset and she started a fight with him, right? And then she came back to the house to drop off the key the next day, you know, and Hank said to her, which was accurate, he was like, that's not what this is really about, you know, like he said, there's something else going on. And the same exact thing is happening here with Karen. And this is a pretty good reflection of real life, because a lot of times people do not start fights directly about what they're really thinking about. They start fights as subterfuge. And here, frankly, what I'm seeing is Karen's already in her head. She's already had her head turned by Bill. She's already drifting towards Bill.
Yeah.
And what she's doing here, just like Meredith, right? And by the way, this is not at all a woman specific thing at all. Guys absolutely do the same shit here. So this is not a but what she's doing is the same thing that Meredith is doing, which is she's picking a fight with Hank. And the reason she's picking a fight with him, and it's true, right, that Hank may in fact be being self-absorbed right now. But in her better days, right, what Karen would do is she would think he's being super self-absorbed and not taking care of the family, but he's got this major project going on with his movie that is not going to last forever, and I will wait until this, you know, this movie passes to see if things return to normal or not. And then if they don't return to normal, then we have to work it out, right? Or she will try to have a conversation with him in some less angry way, right, without it being like a big deal. But because she's got this thing in her head now where she needs to create some kind of conflict so that she feels emotionally justified in drifting away, right? And that's what people do. And sometimes you never know it. Sometimes you never know it. They just create a big fight. They had somebody else, you know, out there, and you never find out.
I don't know. I just feel like a personal experience plus being a third person point of view on relationships and these challenges that are just like not attainable. It's like just it's just like not real. So the fight / argument was artificially created, knowing that the other person is going to fail.
True, I think so. Yeah. Although, I mean, it's on the other hand, right? It's legitimate. Like, if he's really not paying attention to his family at all, that would make him somewhat like his dad, right? Sure. His dad, who, you know, I mean, that's what we're seeing here, right? Is his dad is pretty obviously a selfish guy, right? Who looks out for his own interests first, and you know, that's what we see by him not going to the zoo with Becca and things like that, and the stories of how he's lived his life at this point. And now, what Karen is accusing him of is saying it's not exactly in the same way, because Hank's not a cheater. But she's basically saying you're doing the same shit. You're self-absorbed, you know, like, and Hank can't hear a lot of that because Hank is not seeing the big picture. He doesn't know what's going on in Karen's head right now. And he thinks it can be fixed by like moving back to New York, which anybody else can see is preposterous, right? Like anybody else can see that that's not the issue. Right. And when Karen says like, it's really not the city, like that part of it is totally accurate. It is not the city. It's them. They're drifting apart. Right, and Karen is consciously drifting away.
Yeah. So yeah, and then Hank says they have to get out of the city before the city destroys them. Like you said, it's not even about that. And just like that's like grasping for straws, and we're just like the trajectory clearly showed that you know things are just not happening.
I mean, all that will happen if they move back to New York and they're really not doing well is just going to add a move to New York, and then they're going to have to, you know, sort out their shit in New York because it's not going to last. Like those kinds of dramatic moves, they do preserve things for a while, but they're very temporary patches on problems. They don't solve problems. So
back in the present day, the pimp smacks Hank and Runkle saves Hank.
Trixie, by the way, in 2007, I mean, I'm afraid to say this stuff to reveal how much I know, but Trixie would not have a pimp in 2007. Trixie would be working independently, and if Hank didn't have any money to pay, they would walk down to an ATM, and he would get money to pay her. Like, some dude would not show up at the hotel to beat him up. Really, that just wouldn't happen. Just saying.
So earlier we missed this line, which like you don't do a line to blow off a girl's back and not hear what her dreams are. So when Trixie leaves, she says she wanted to be a veterinarian.
Aw, that's sweet. And she's still taking care of animals like Hank. So, you know, very nice. She has in some way found what she was destined to do.
So Runkle starts crying. Hank's like, what are you doing? And then Runkle's like, sorry about your old man. Hank's dad used to, you know, call him the walking penis. Runkle's like, well, then screw that guy.
Which is true of all bald dudes, right? Like all bald guys look like walking penises. But yeah, that was a pretty awesome line spoken by Hank's dad off camera. You know, he said he used to walk penis. The great man. He does, but he totally looks like a walking penis. I'm totally there.
Runkle tells Hank that he can't run from his problems. And I've had this experience too, like both ways, like people commenting on me or me commenting on other people. It's like when you're like, oh, I'm so sorry, then the receiving side's like, I just like when a bad thing happens to
Yeah.
somebody, they're just like, they handle it really maturely. And
Well, I wouldn't say Hank is handling it maturely, but sometimes people just don't want to hear shit, you know? Like, sometimes the thing is, the problem is, right? I'm sorry can be really sincere, but it doesn't always come off that way. It comes off sort of pro forma in a lot of cases. The reality is, the way that you show that you're sorry is by doing what Karen and Charlie have done, which is both of them have really shown up for Hank here, right? That's how you show that you care about someone, that you're sorry. They know that, right? Like, it doesn't even have to be said. But nonetheless, sometimes you just don't want to hear that shit, right? But you have to say it.
Sure.
You have to. So.
In the past, like Hank's dad and Hank have issues. Hank is pissed at his dad for cheating. And then Hank's dad said he just falls in love with every woman he sees, which is like not unlike Hank, but Hank has a problem when his dad does it.
That's right. That's right. Well, Hank, here's the thing. Hank doesn't act on it. That's a pretty big difference, right? So that, yeah, that does. But yeah, his dad, look, his dad is just he's a super womanizer. There's a lot of guys like this. They just need to, chase every piece of tail that they can. And the thing is, it would be it's much more acceptable now than it is in his dad's era. Like, in his dad's era, if you have any sympathy with his dad at all, I mean, I can tell you, I don't think my grandparents, I don't think they slept with each other for 40 years. I really don't, And because they didn't really like each other, and the fact of the matter is, they should not have actually been together if they weren't, Catholic and committed to like never getting a divorce. They should have gotten a divorce years ago. They really shouldn't have been together. They weren't compatible. And so I could kind of understand the dad when he was just like, listen, your mom and I, we weren't compatible like that. Because back in the day, you were almost forced to get married like really, really young. You didn't necessarily, first of all, our frontal cortexes aren't even fully developed into our mid-20s. We don't even fully know who we ourselves are
Sure.
until then at the earliest. And so you end up in these relationships that, yeah, like they maybe aren't great relationships, but they end up staying together for the kids. And as scummy as it is to be unfaithful because it's just so damaging to your relationship, like you can kind of understand in situations like this and the way the world was, it's much less acceptable now in Hank's situation because like with Hank and Karen, it's much more common slash acceptable to just be like, you know what, this relationship is over and we'll have to figure out the kid and we'll have to deal with that, right? And that you're just allowed to do that now, whereas in the past it was there was a lot more social pressure against doing that. So I kind of understand where his dad's coming from. And if I want to be not judgmental, like, I think that's honestly how a lot of people lived. It still is how a lot of people live. And some people have okay relationships, but I don't think too many.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, there's no universal
But I,
sub
to be
thing.
fair, I don't see why the person that you have to. I mean, this is a very, maybe a very guy's point of view, but I don't see why the person that you love and live with has to be the only person that you sleep with. Fundamentally, it seems entirely possible to sleep with other people and still have, a bottom bitch. Shout out to the pimp.
And one of our buddies believes in this too, and I don't think she's, I think she's okay being named, but we're just not gonna name her until
Wait,
we
you
got
know a
another
girl who
reason.
believes in this?
Yeah, we were talking about this before we were recording.
Not with me, dude. You gotta send me a name and number after the show.
You know who it is.
I have no idea because I've never once known a girl like this.
Fine, once I mention the name, you're gonna be like, oh, okay, no thanks.
Am I gonna pass once you mention the name?
I'm pretty sure you will, but you think she's cool too.
I don't think
Anyway.
you know me all that well. I don't pass.
Well, things have to be mutual as well in order, or maybe not. I don't know. I don't. Okay, no, I'm just gonna shut up now before I
Ouch,
really
dude.
get in
That's
trouble.
cold, man. You just ranked me at the very bottom. Damn, I'm ranking an unknown person. I'm giving an unknown person an uncapped range. Oh man. You just gave me a range that's
I
capped.
didn't. No, I didn't mean it like that. I meant just like I've seen you guys interact. It's just not
What? But
a
this is wild. I have no idea what this
thing.
is.
You 100% know who it is.
I'm so inept. I'm so
fucking
inept.
Joe Kim. When she hears this, she's gonna know pretty much know who it is. Anyway, Hank.
Joe Kim, send me an email. You know, I'm here. All right.
Hank and Karen argue about whether he's having an affair, and which is like the whole accusation thing, right? When they start accusing you, then something's, you know, they're probably.
That's the whole thing. It's total projection. It's 100 complete projection. It's like all the things that, you know, somebody like Donald Trump says the other side is going to do. Right. Oh, the other side is going to, you know, put us in camps. Oh, the other side is going to commit major vote fraud. Right. Things like that. Like all that stuff that they supposedly protect against. It's because that's the stuff in their heads that they think about doing. And it's the same thing for Karen. Everybody always projects their worst ills onto everyone else. Karen is the one who's up to no good here. And she has, in order to facilitate this, she has to tell herself, well, you know, Hank's probably, he's probably doing it too. You know, and to be fair, with the kind of dad Hank has, most of the times in life, when you have a dad like that, you're going to turn out like that. So, but in this case, he's not, you know, he's apparently not.
So Hank says, he thinks about having affairs, but doesn't have any. And then Hank's like, what, are you having an affair? And then boom, Karen drops the bomb. You know me, Hank, talking and the fucking go hand in hand, which is an important line, you know, it's going to be a callback later. And so, yeah, Karen slept with Bill, and Hank tries to do a Hail Mary, you know, get with her, and then she's like, no, it's just not working. And then Becca overhears, asks if they're getting divorced. Hank gets upset, raises his voice, and he says he's doing the best he can. Becca retreats in the room. Hank sees a letter from his dad.
Number of things going on here. Yeah. Right. You know, definitely the talking thing. Right, Hank is asking about the fucking. Karen isn't telling about the fucking. She's telling about the talking. But the thing is, for Karen, right, who's tied up in this emotionally, the telling him about the talking is the confession. Right, that's the confession. But what Hank is worried about, because he's a guy, and because the way that he views intimacy is, you know, like is a much larger percentage physical intimacy. Right, that's the big thing that he's worried about. Right,
yeah.
And so then she has to confess that to him as well, and that's when he really flies off the handle. He probably would have dealt with it better. Then they try to do this like half makeout or whatever. And you know, for all the psychology people out there, there is a thing called, it's called hysterical bonding, which is actually maybe a sexist name, but you know, hysterical bonding is after, you know, infidelity. It's weird, but you know, humans, we are strange creatures and we are animals. After infidelity, people's sex life will often go through the roof. And they will have some of the best sex that they ever had.
Wow.
And, you know, there's, listen, jealousy and trying to, what it's really about is trying to reform a connection, right? Because you've had this horrific break that is really, really devastating to people, especially the partner that is cheated on. And it's an absolutely devastating break. It completely destroys their sense of self. It destroys not only their identity, it destroys every sense of trust they have in pretty much everything in the world. And it's something that maybe, you know, that you have to work extremely hard forever just to get back, and maybe it doesn't come back, you know. And so it's awful. It's really the worst thing you can do to someone. And but yeah, there's a thing called hysterical bonding, which is people connect and they have crazy sex. Is what it is. So and then you see, you know, when Becca comes out and she says, are you guys going to get a divorce? Because as I've been saying, right, even though they weren't married, everybody knows they're quote unquote married, and that Hank and Karen breaking up is a divorce, right? Like that's, and so, you know, that's why all the time Karen throws back at Hank, like, you know, you didn't put a ring on it. That's all bullshit. And then, you know, what Hank is doing here is what people so often do, which is he's upset, he's frustrated, he takes it out on Becca, right? And he feels immediately bad, right? Yeah. But he yells at her, right, a little bit. It's not that bad, right? This is not going to be like a super traumatic experience for Becca, except for the fact that her parents are breaking up. But like, he's not that bad. He apologizes pretty instantly and feels bad. But yeah, that's what people do, is their stress levels get super high. They get really beaten down and they feel bad about life. This is a low moment for his entire life right here. You know, at this particular moment, he is very likely lower at the moment that Karen cheated on him than he is when his own dad died. For sure.
And, I mean, not surprised, I guess. I don't know.
Right. So it's kind of understandable. But then he got this letter, right, from his dad, whose name is, I guess, Al. So he got this letter. He gets this letter from Al Moody that he just he sets it aside, right? He doesn't open it.
Al Moody. All Moody. I'm just
Al
kidding.
Moody. Yeah.
So yeah, present
the
day.
To the Moody's.
Yeah. Present day, Hank opens the letter and Karen reads the letter, which
really
is
really nice letter. Surprisingly yeah. nice letter from the piece of crap that was his dad.
To my son, the writer, and since his dad didn't say love you that much, his dad didn't say I love you that much, so he tried to be different, but he couldn't be. He tried, but he slipped back into the things that he knew. And he's sorry, they haven't talked for a while. Hank's a good kid, funny kid, and his only son. Hank's dad confesses to claiming he never read Hank's books, but he actually did, and he read, and he didn't tell Hank because he didn't like the fathers in them. He didn't like how Hank wrote the fathers, and he knows that, you know, creative liberties might be taken, but he was afraid that there weren't creative liberties.
Right, that the dads in Hank's books are just kind of crummy. And it's true, you write what you know. So there's a good chance that Hank is, you know, he said, I know you take liberties, which is absolutely true, right? Like a lot, if you're writing something, a lot of times you're going to write a completely exaggerated version of your parents. I mean, I say, you know, something that I do, which I think is funny, which I don't think anyone else really thinks is funny, but like I do create these like exaggerated caricatures of my parents that are just like, you know, just terrible, right? And they weren't really like that at all. There's definitely a kernel of truth, but I have definitely taken liberties with that kernel of truth, right? And so that's something you could absolutely do in a book, right? Because your own dad might not be bad enough to write into a book, but if you take the worst parts of your dad and exaggerate the shit out of them, right, then it becomes a good character to have in a book.
Yeah.
So I understand it, but it definitely is an uncomfortable thing for him to talk about, and you know, I can understand why the dad wouldn't do it, but the point is he's proud of Hank.
Yeah.
And he says, I'm here if you need me, right? And he gave him this advice. And while this is going on, there's like old scenes of Grandpa with Becca, you know, playing like this nostalgia in the background, kind of bringing back the earlier episodes where Hank would get nostalgic about, you know, Becca and Karen on the beach and things like that. And then we get the best thing ever in the letter, right? At the very end of the letter, where he says, I saw your movie.
Yeah, not yet.
It says trailer for the movie.
Boys grow up to be men. Men grow up to be fathers, and he's doing the best he can. Hank's doing the best he can, and right. You know. So,
but then he said. But then the dad says, "I saw a trailer for your movie. It looks like a piece of shit."
Yeah.
And you know, that's like the thing is, Hank is going to be super touched by this letter in the moments right after his dad's death. That's going to hit him as much as anything, because that speaks to Hank. Right, because like his dad was kind of like defending the movie a little bit when they were talking in the thing, right? He was like, Carr seems like a good guy, you know, blah, blah. And then he said, it looks like a piece of shit. Like, and you've talked about this, how like all of the characters that really get Hank, right, they all hate the movie.
Yeah.
You know, they think the movie's trash. So, yeah.
And then that's love your old man. And then, like you said, P.S. it's the preview of the movie. The movie looks like a piece of shit. Hank and Karen regress in their old ways. And so now Karen cheats on Bill. But, you know, like Karen...
This is horrible.
She calls herself out. She's like, you know her. Like, the fucking goes with the talking. So, you know, they were...
Yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah, very good. Yeah. So they're talking now. It's a very emotional time for Hank. He's super vulnerable, which is inexplicably super hot. But, yeah. Well, here's the thing. It's only hot if they respect you already. If they view you as like a complete loser and then you start like sobbing, right, then you're just like a complete soft loser. But if they think you're like a real man and you like break down, then it's like, oh, wow, this guy, like that real man is showing emotion, right? And then you're like, what about that guy over there crying? Oh, he's a loser. He's a bitch, right? I'm not going to talk. I'm going to stick over here with this real man. Okay. So
Karen sends Hank to the airport and they hug, and Hank says he loves Karen.
Hold on, can we go back to the makeout scene?
Yeah.
Gross scene. Way too much close up on the mouth, like lots of like tongues half out of lips and like lip biting. And the scene definitely improved when like Karen was on the bottom and like looking up, right? Because you know, like she has like those amazing like eyes, and so like I was feeling that. I was like, you know, I wouldn't mind that experience, but like the kissing scene, just gross, disgusting. Don't need to see any of that. But like the part where she was just like looking up at him with those big doe eyes, you know, enhanced likely by, you know, any number of surgeries. I thought that part was okay, but the first part of it was just gross. You know, way too much mouth action going on. Can't stand that.
Damn.
Yeah, and like tongue action. Like really, guys? Like I don't need to see this. Yeah, I mean, listen, French kissing is disgusting. I don't know why people, you know, whatever. I certainly don't want to see anybody else do it.
Esther, Liv, show them what's up. Anyway,
I didn't say I wouldn't do it. Are you suggesting Esther and Liv French kiss each other? That I could tolerate. That's
there you
okay.
go. There you go. Not gross anymore, eh?
Better for sure. Yeah. Yeah, so then you're okay. So then you're right. They go to the airport. She drops them off in a Prius. Shout out to Prius.
Shout out to Priya. Priya.
Only very amazing people have Priuses. So we know now that Karen is amazing, right? Right
Who else
on.
drives a Prius?
I don't know anyone.
I don't know
Certainly,
anyone.
if you're a guy and you drive a Prius, you're a complete loser. I don't know any
Oh,
guys
in
who
that
drive
case, I
Priuses.
drive a Prius.
Oh shit. Uh-oh. Yeah.
So, hey.
You know, I haven't gotten a ticket for years. Okay. And then I had like a 1 month old expired plate, even though I had the sticker, I just not put the new sticker on. And a cop winged around on the freeway to come and give me a ticket. And you know why he gave me a ticket? Because I was driving a Prius, and just days before I had put a Bernie sticker on my Prius. And I'm sure that's why he decided to ramp up the harassment to give me a ticket, because he's like, fuck this guy, drives a Prius supporting Bernie, right? Like, and so I got a ticket because of that. After that, I had to take the Bernie sticker off my Prius because, for one, I don't support losers, and two, you know, I didn't want to get any more tickets, and I knew the police, you know, were going to come down on me hard for that sticker, so I had to let it go. But Karen, unlike Hank earlier in the episode, she does not get a ticket, as far as I know.
So Hank says he loves Karen. He didn't say it to hear it back and says thanks for helping him get his head out of his ass, which
Rookie
is,
move. Rookie move. You never say I love you first. Rookie move. Really bad stuff from a guy's experience as Hank Moody. Not good, man.
So Hank asks what the purple flower is called, and I think Karen says jack around a tree.
Yeah.
So this
Which
was
are, you know,
the
in the summer, in like the early summer around June, they bloom in they bloom like crazy in LA. Like you can go to almost any park, really, really beautiful, you know, bluish flower. And you can go to like Elysian Park near Dodger Stadium, and you know, there's jacaranda trees everywhere, or in English, you know, jacaranda trees are everywhere. And you know, it's a really, really beautiful setting. So but that harkens back to earlier in the episode, right?
Yeah, so I think the message here is like for all the harsh stuff and the toxic stuff that Hank accused his dad of, like Hank never looked out for the interest of his dad. Like in the very beginning, he's like, "What's the name of that purple flower?" He's like,
Oh,
"I don't know,
that's
go look it up." I don't know, that's how I
okay. So
rewatching
hold
all
on. So
this.
you read this as like evidence. So Hank is like feeling like he's like, oh shit, I never answered this question. Is that
Yeah,
it?
like he accuses his dad of not caring, but in the end, like Hank didn't care to answer the
Maybe Hank was
question.
too full of himself to even worry about like what his dad's issues were. And maybe like I mean, I think his dad was a little judgmental about him too, but maybe not so much as Hank was judgmental of his dad. And maybe you're saying Hank should have been a little bit more understanding of the stuff that his dad, you know, had gone through and things like that.
Or just like
Didn't Hank's,
at.
but of course his dad also beat him up, right? Which was a
Yeah.
discussion earlier in the episode that I think we kind of missed.
Yeah,
But yeah,
that.
that's not cool, man. That stuff has an indelible effect that really never goes away when people have to suffer violence as children. So it's tough to forgive somebody for that, honestly. But
So.
yeah, I see what you're saying. I saw it as like, I saw it as almost a completion, you know, like Hank couldn't answer the question, but Karen could answer the question, right? And even if the dad wasn't there, it goes to show, you know, Karen can kind of like pick him up. You know, Karen is like Hank's muse. She can kind of pick him up. She can help him out, you know, when the
She completes him.
yeah, exactly. And so I thought there's that. And, you know, the jacaranda is, you know, it represents supposedly, according to AtoZFlowers.com, is a representation of wisdom, rebirth, wealth, and good luck. Well, certainly wisdom and rebirth can apply here. Yeah, but this stuff's easy with symbolism. You can always say stuff applies, you know, but if the flower falls on your head, it means good fortune for you, which I did not know. So it turns out if we ever go back to work, Wayne, we're going to have to go sit underneath a jacaranda tree and, you know, let the leaves fall on our head. Or maybe just, well, maybe I'll just get you a leaf and you can put it on your head, like, while you're at the casino.
Sure.
And we would still be in only like the 10th percentile for superstitious people there. If we made a wreath of jacaranda, you know, leaves and wore it for good luck, we would still not be in the upper percentiles of, you know, superstitious nut jobs there. Mm. So, yeah.
That's...
What do you think about this episode, Wayne? You enjoy it?
I remember the very first time I watched it, and it crushed me. And I was in a different phase too, because I felt like Asian American. I was doing all the wrong with trying to screen right, you know, doing the gaming stuff, the poker, when just the paths that they set out for me just weren't possible. Like, you know, growing up in Silicon Valley, you need to be pretty damn good to be a programmer. And while I wasn't dumb by any measures, I definitely could not cut it there. And it's I had these other abilities, and they just this is why the Asian American story fails, is because you could have other abilities and they just want you to be bad at something that they heard of versus, you know, good at something else.
No, so I would recommend in your next life be born to poor white parents. And then, no matter what complete and utter lack of accomplishment your life turns out to be, they will still think you're the smartest person in the family and give you all kinds of propers. So, you know, even if you're the person who could have, you know, really raised the family social status up and you completely fail, it'll be okay.
You know, well,
until they marry Nazis.
I mean, I do want to.
You remember how I said I used this exaggerated caricature of my parents?
Yeah.
Part about Nazis is not that.
Israel. I don't want any overly negative stuff, and I've definitely been toxic myself when regarding my relationship with my family, and it's really a sad story that didn't need to happen, in the sense that there were definitely mistakes on all my family's end, including myself, but a lot of the bad stuff just really didn't need to happen.
I believe you. I totally believe you on that. There's so much bad stuff that doesn't need to happen. But whatever happened, Wayne, so that you turned out to be the man that you are today, it couldn't have been that bad, because you're a good man, sir.
Bluffing? Okay.
I'm gonna keep my range uncapped on this one.
All right, guys. Thank you for listening. And man, season 1, episode 9 is lit. So we will get that to you.
Hey guys, thanks a lot. You know, we really appreciate you guys supporting us, listening to us, and it's only 99 cents a month. That's the minimum donation. You know, like, that ain't shit. You know, did you guys go out and buy like a candy bar in the last week or something like that? Like, 99 cents is nothing. Wayne and I are unemployed. You know, we got nothing. We're about to lose our house. We're in really bad shape. So anything you can give, you know, we really appreciate it. Tell all your friends, you know, they don't really have to watch, but just tell them there's these two guys who are in real trouble, and, you know, if they could spare anything, right? I mean, times is really hard. It's really hard. So, but thank you guys for watching California Case 2020.
2020. See you next time, guys. Later.